Welcome to Criminal Thinking Deterred with your host, Tony Moore. Here we talk about how to take responsibility for your decisions, stop hurting people, become a positive force in your community, and end the criminal thinking that deters everyone.
Welcome to Criminal Thinking Deterred. I'm your guest, Tony Moore, and I'm with my executive producer, Philip Day. And we got a very special guest today, good friend of mine, spiritual brother, Darren Taylor. Works in Racine and in the substance abuse behavioral department. We'll get right to it and let Darren tell us a little bit about yourself and what are you doing these days in the recovery field.
Okay, again, my name is Darren. To God be the glory. I want to thank Tony and for having me this morning. You know, like so many others, made some bad choices in my life at a young age. Ended up getting into drugs. Stayed in it for 27 years. By the grace of God, I've now been clean for the past 24 years. My clean date is November 20th of 1999, and for that, I am grateful.
Yes. So what made you get into the counseling side of the substance abuse?
You know, it's when I, sadly, I should say, but when I was still using drugs, I actually had ran into some guys that were in the field, and it was something that kind of inspired me. Like, I was like, wow, that seems like a pretty cool job to have. So even in active addiction, I used to tell people that I was going to be a drug counselor. And it, you know, for it to come into fruition is really a cool deal, because after I did get clean in 99, in 2003, I actually went back to school at the age of 43, and I attended Gateway Technical, and I earned my associate degree in human services and started counseling there. And then I continued my education with, I got a bachelor's degree from Upper Iowa with human services and social work. So
all the drug you use, was you dealing with the opiates, heroin, the marijuana, alcohol, new drug out, fentanyl, any lead into fentanyl, anything like that? Any knowledge about it?
I started out in that era, you know, in the late 70s, early 70s, you know, me and my friends, it was just, you know, we get a hold of a couple joints and, you know, would smoke a couple joints. And then eventually I started drinking beer. I had some relatives that I saw and some friends at a early age where I seen like the effects of heroin and what it was, what it would do to people. So I kind of knew then that was something I never wanted to venture into. But in 1984, I was introduced to freebasing cocaine. I can just remember the first hit that I took of cocaine, the euphoria of it was so different and like nothing I had never experienced. It seemed like for the next 15 years that I used, I was chasing that hit, right? I was fortunate, like I said, because I saw the effects of heroin and what it did. I wasn't ever a fan of needles, so I didn't go that way. And then by the time this fentanyl came around, you know, I can remember like back in the days, the heroin, the T's and blues, you know, people that were using that and just seeing how it had them feeling or seeing how they were looking and how they were functioning, I was like, man, that don't look like fun at all. So that was nothing really interested me. But the fentanyl, the things they got today, the way it's just ravishing our communities and people is just I've never seen, you know, the crack epidemic was bad in the you know, late 80s, 90s, you know, but this thing here is just, it's a whole different animal. It's a beast. And I don't think people are really understanding the effects it's having on communities.
The fentanyl use.
Yes, the fentanyl use is just, I've never, you know, like I said, I've been around for a few 24 hours and I've never seen a drug, like I said, the crack cocaine, it did some damage, but this fentanyl thing, it's killing people. You know, the crack was basically had us like destroying our lives. We weren't really, you know, we, you know, some of us became unemployable and things of that nature, or it was hard to hold a job, you know, stealing from your relatives, things of that nature. But this fentanyl thing is, you know, one wrong turn and you done, you know?
Okay. So how do you deal with the stress of knowing that something that you're working with as a counselor is out here killing your clients when they come in to visit at, and you work at a community that's open to the community and have community resources, and you see a lot of people come in and out your office. How do you deal with the pressures of that?
You know, I got a good support group around me. You know, I can even say, you know, such as guys like you with pastors. And the thing about it, Tony, is, and we were just talking about this in one of my men's groups a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about self-care, you know, and what a lot of people fail to realize is when you get into the counseling field, you really have to take care of yourself. Because if you don't, what happens is when these guys start coming in your office, whether it's men, women, and they're, you know, giving you the horror stories of their active addiction, and you're trying your best to keep some healthy boundaries and, you know, stay on point. But sometimes it can be difficult. And if you're not careful, you'll take this stuff home, which you'll leave the office with it. You know, but the one thing I've learned is that if I'm healthy, and I'm practicing some healthy spiritual principles, and then even though it can be a daunting task of trying to help people get off drugs and alcohol, I have to remind myself that if they're not ready, just like until I was ready, there's not a lot we can do. You know, we can have all the knowledge, we can have the books, we can have all of that. But until a person is ready to surrender on their own, all we can do is just keep educating them. You know, that's my biggest thing now, man, is educate. You know, let me tell you about the effects of this drug, or, you know, how it affects the mind, how it affects the body, how it affects, you know, your family. So just educate, man, educate. Yeah.
That therapeutic alliance with individuals that come in and you're trying to help them. You as a servant, me as a servant in the counseling field, if we do adhere to what you're saying, the self-care is so important that you got to remember coming out of addiction yourself, if that be your case. Who's counseling the counselor is very important. And that, even if that's a therapeutic approach with God as your spiritual person that you go to, the Bible, or you have some way of venting and growing within yourself. So when you're talking about self-care, what has been the best way for you to get involved with NAAA or any other groups or your men group, as you mentioned? How important has that been for your growth as a servant?
It's been, it's a major factor in my recovery. You know, one of the things that I really try to stress to my clients is there's a difference between being abstinent and being in recovery. A lot of times a person may stop using, right? But then the abstinence alone is not going to keep them like growing. This thing is about spiritual growth. So when we talk about abstinent, a person may stop using, but then their behaviors, their mannerisms, their way of thinking, all of that may stay basically the same as it was in active addiction. Mm-hmm. In recovery, right? And I tell people all the time, I'm a recovering drug addict. And I still go to NA meetings, right? At least two a week. And I chair meetings, right? I stay active. Why? Because when I came into the rooms in November of 99, people were there for me, you know? So I feel like I have an obligation, a duty to be at these meetings. So when someone comes in and they're ready to surrender, right? I want to be there to help them transition into this thing the best they can. You know, I sponsor guys. I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. We do step work. You know, so I don't ask anyone to do anything that I don't do myself. You know, I'm not going to ask my sponsee to do step work if I'm not doing step work. You know, I don't encourage my clients to go to meetings and then I don't go to meetings. That isn't how it works. Yes. Not for me.
Okay. So when you start thinking about the damage that comes out of the journey back or the journey forward, and you look at the emotional and mental health, have you been indoctrinated in the mental health approach to people who are broke up, bent up, tore up, that come in your office? How do you deal with that separation of the mental and emotional?
And Tony, that's so important. You know, for years, a person may have addiction and mental health, but somehow only one would be addressed. So they may send them to a treatment facility to address their addiction, their alcohol or drug addiction, but then the mental health wasn't addressed or even diagnosed. Or they may diagnose somebody with a mental health issue, but then they're overlooking how it's leading them to self-medicate. So one of the things now that, you know, we realize, and it's very important during the assessment, is we try to make sure that, and I stay in my own lane, right? I'm not giving people a mental health diagnosis. I mm-hmm. just make, when we are assessing them, we get as much information as we can. So then that's how we can get them to the resources that they need. And for so long, again, the mental health and the addiction aspect weren't being addressed at the same time. So if you only address one, then in all likelihood, the other one is still going to cause some problems, right? So it's very important that if a person has a mental health issue and an alcohol and drug issue, that both get addressed at the same time.
So in seeing that mental health and the substance abuse, do you also see underlying trauma based in stuff that's going on with these folks coming in? They got a lot of trauma from PTSD type stuff.
Yes. And, you know, we have guys that have, you know, gone into the service. We have people who in their youth, you know, were molested, you know, taken advantage of. We have women who have been raped. And unfortunately, because they didn't have a venue or they chose to just kind of deal with it on their own, a lot of times that's how so many people may end up on alcohol or drugs, is because they don't deal with the trauma. You know, one of the things that I had to look at was, for my own personal trauma, was that I had to go back to the origin of when did this occur. And a lot of times, this is what we talk about in the recovery, is that people, if they don't want to do the work, then no work, no results, right? But if you come here and you're willing to work, and people say, what work are you referring to? The work on you, right? If you're willing to do the work on you, then that's how you'll start to spiritually grow and be able to get through some of this stuff. You know, so when people come into my office and they say, man, you know, this happened when I was young and I never really dealt with it. Or even like people now, you know, you got so many of these guys, they're losing friends, through active addiction, and they're not really dealing with the mourning. They're just, you know, self-medicating. They're trying to put something on it so they don't have to feel, not realizing that's only making it worse, you know?
Yes. So when you now, when you get these folks and you see all of these issues that they may bring, and I know you have had some training in criminal thinking and using those approaches. Do you think the criminal thinking approach of accountability and change is a good treatment approach, therapeutic approach in dealing with some of the stuff that comes out of the streets, coming out of the neighborhoods and environments that we come from? Do you think that person-centered approach is a good one?
To a certain degree. Somehow, I think we as a society are leaning more towards punitive, like punish. You know, and if I take a guy and he commits a drug-related crime and he's going to be sent to prison, but while in prison, he never gets the opportunity to address his addiction and doesn't get help. So basically what I did is I took him, I put him in prison, I didn't teach him anything, right? And I put him right back out, probably in the same environment, and said, now go survive, right? So at some point in time, when these guys are going to prison, going to jail, we really need to take the resources and say, okay, if this guy had a drug-related crime, then before he can be released back into society, that needs to be addressed, right? But we got guys that say, well, they're not going to be here long enough, so, you know, or the program is so full, or, you know, and Tony, again, I love our judicial system as far as it's there. People who commit crimes, they should be punished, right? But
you agree.
Saying a special category for alcoholics and drug addicts. I'm simply saying, if this is never addressed, right, then in all likelihood, they will continue to do the same thing. Why? Because until the addiction is addressed, things most likely are going to remain the same.
Yes. Well, you know, when you're thinking about treatment approaches and the different levels of clients that we deal with, categories of clients, backgrounds, environments, stimuli that they deal with. Me, myself, as a therapist, using the criminal thinking approach and approaching it from a servitude, as a servant, someone, I can love you in spite of who you are type of direction, helps me not be judgmental of these young men. How have you found, as a spiritual brother, the love that you have for God transfer to giving your clients the benefit of the doubt to love them to help? How has that worked for you?
You know, that's a very interesting question. And I'm going to say this. You know, every once in a while, I'll be driving in my car. I could be walking, and I'll see a person and I can tell, like, they may be, as we call, on a mission, or they may be going through something. And I will say at that moment, but for the grace of God, there go I. So I always ask God, don't ever let me forget where you brought me from. Because left up to my own devices, I would have finished the job of self-destruction. So when someone comes into my office, I don't look at the person as far as I'm going to try to fix them. I look at the person and I say, help me to help you figure out some things you may need to change, and then let's formulate a plan on how to change it. All too often, counselors or therapists or people in servitude, they want to bring people where they're at. That's not the approach I use. The approach I use is wherever you're at, I meet you there, and then we work from there. So then we grow together, right? And if that person seems to start tailing off, right, then I know how to stop and say, okay, let's regroup. You know, mm-hmm. what's going on, right? All too often, we want to get people where we're at, right? You want to do this thing too fast. This is a process, man, yeah. right? This is a time thing. And think about it this way. If God would have gave me what I deserved, where would I be?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So see, it's easy for me to then sit and not stand in judgment. If a God tells me that he didn't, you know, touch a kid, if he didn't rape somebody, if he didn't kill somebody, whatever that is, that's between him and God. My job is to help you see some things that you may need to change and then guide you into how to change that. So yeah. whether it's your beliefs, whether it's you, you know, when we talk about spirituality, all too often we fall into religion, right? I'm talking about your morals, your values, your core beliefs, right? Your beliefs. Those things to me are what makes you spiritual, is what makes you you. So if we can get back to those, because a lot of times in active addiction, all of those things are stripped, you know, they're gone. So then once you come out of the addiction, then you have to start to regroup. Well, then one of the things is, man, is you have to get back to your morals, your values. And if that stuff was never taught to you, then that's something we definitely are going to work on.
Yeah. Well, I know in my approach with the criminal thinking, we always ask those first five questions. Stop and think of who gets hurt, the reasoning process, and then stop and think of the immediate consequences. Stop and think the plan ahead, think ahead, make another choice, and examination right. of conscience, and take moral inventory daily. So when you say the moral inventory, that's supposed to be a process of a daily approach of what do I need to do on a daily basis to check my morals in about what am I doing? That's one of the approaches in the criminal thinking that I use. But when you talk about non-judgmental guided journey, as you were saying, that guided journey, let's go on a journey together to do this process. Mm-hmm. And extending yourself, how important has that been in the 24 years now? You had 24 years. That guided journey, the example to other folks, what do you think that does as an impact to other people outside of just your environment of work and in your home and in your community? How have your 24 years of your guided journey impacted the community?
I like to say, you know, there's nothing more rewarding when whether you're at the grocery store, you know, you somewhere in the community, and one of your former clients will come up to you and say, man, I want to thank you, right? For, you know, I didn't listen to everything you said at that moment, but eventually I can remember some of the things you said, and I'm glad that now, you know, I'm doing better, you know? And to me, doing better is a step up. You know, this ain't about perfectionism. This is about coming to the realization that you have a problem and now you're willing to address it. So when we start talking about change, you know, we're talking about the five stages of change, right? Mm-hmm. The pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, maintenance, right? Mm-hmm. So if I guide you through those steps, right, to where now you'll understand what it is, the process of change, right? When we, back in the, I want to say, what was it, 2000s or so, when we were doing Thinking for a Change mm-hmm. or CPT, right? And we were doing them thinking reports. And I used yeah. to wonder, like, why is this so thinking report? And then somebody told me, they said, well, think about how repetitious your drug addiction is. Well, now, if you did that over and over again, if you do these thinking reports over and over again, it will start to help you identify where the errors of your thinking are, so then you can correct them. So in the community, for me, being that example, man, you know, I can't be as telling people about recovery and this and that, and then they see me coming out the bars or, you know, out here doing some things that, you know, as a spiritual man, I shouldn't be doing. You know what I mean? So it's very important to me, man, that it's not that I'm afraid of standing in people's judgment, because only God can judge me. But the one thing I don't want to be is a hypocrite. I don't want to be that guy, man, that is saying one thing in the meetings and at my job and then living a whole different lifestyle outside of that. You know, I once did a speech. I was asked to come to a convention, and they gave me a topic. It was called "What Happens When the Mask Is Removed." When you remove the mask, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, Tony, in this thing, we as therapists, we build up this reputation. And if we're not careful, we segue into that, right? And then we'll put on this mask, right? But then you gotta go home, man. You gotta live outside of the office. So what you gonna do then, right?
Yes.
So
it
was very important for me, a lesson to learn, man. Right. Yeah, this process.
Yeah. That's one of the errors in thinking that we used to always focus on was the criminal mask.
The criminal mask.
Because it talks about the tough guy, nice guy, and kind manipulator in the errors in thinking. But you know what, you brought up a good point. So as an example, you can't go to a P. Diddy party and call yourself a recovering sanctified person then.
Right.
That would be tough to do that. See, and that I like that example, because what you are in the community, you have to stand for something, even in spite of the sacrifices that you may have to make at high levels of going certain places. Like, I've been invited to some political things that I just couldn't go because it was a whole bunch of getting together to have a meet and a greet to drink and meet each other. So I couldn't go as a recovering person and a therapeutic person who have just told clients that they got to sacrifice some environmental places or sacrifice some family members and not go to the picnic. But here it is, I'm going to a political party rally and drinking beer or whatever, with all those things that there, and not standing for what I say. You know, exactly. It's very important that you stand on what you be about as a therapist and make a decision who you are. Not all therapists have to do what me or you do, but they have to do what they tell a client that they're willing to sacrifice to do. If you ask a client to do it, you better be able to do it. You know, I've always been taught that. So some of the people that you learn from, in your past counselors, how did their impact of knowledge help you to grow? And who are some of the people that made a profound impact on your life?
I would like say Pastor Randy, Pastor Funderburg. And the reason why I say those two pastors first is because in active addiction, those guys went through it, right? We use this word that you rarely hear now, and it's called tarry, where people tarried with you. They stayed with you. They didn't just give up on you right away, right? I met these guys like in 91 or 92, right? And I took them through you know what, right? Mm-hmm. But they stayed with me, man. And when I finally came back in 99 and God knew I was ready, and then what they did is they embraced me, they loved me, and they showed me how to do this. Then I got guys like Ricky P, right? Ricky Person. He gave me my first counseling job. Greg P is the only sponsor I've ever had in this deal. James Coates, some of my predecessors who were Mark Gates. All of these guys, man, played a major role in my recovery, right? In my life. Why? Because they were spiritual men that showed me how to live, and they didn't co-sign your BS. You know, they would tell you, like, dude, you need to check that. You know, it was a time I wasn't doing what I needed to be doing, and people were seeing my car in some shady areas. And I had some guys come to me and say, man, you know, you need to check yourself, right? They didn't just let me, like, stay out there. You know what I mean? And that's why, Tony, I'm grateful for guys even such as you, man. You, and I ain't saying this because I'm on your podcast. I'm saying this, this is real. For me to see what you have done in the community, right? Your name, man, is it rings loud. Not in just an ocean, it rings loud and Racine. So you guys are very inspirational to me. And I got to just say this, man, you know, Black-owned businesses, right, are far and in between. So to see you, right, as a Black man, right, do what you've been able to do in the manner that you've done it, man, this is awesome, right? How can you not be inspired watching you do what you do, right? Watching these men go from being drug addicts themselves to being pastors and leading congregations. You know, when I look at Ricky and all the stuff he's been able to accomplish, right? Greg, I look at all the stuff he's been able to accomplish. I'm so blessed to have so many, I call them spiritual giants in my life that, you know, I'm just fortunate, man. Yeah. I'm great.
Well, I thank you very much for that. And you have been a great brother to grow with and to learn from on this guided journey that we have had together across 30 some odd years. And knowing all of those men that you have mentioned and watching them grow and being inspired myself to know that it's possible, change is possible by watching them, because I know some of their backgrounds. I know Mark, Lord has took them on home, and him and James Coles. But those were good brothers who set some solid foundations on recovery. For us to see that it's possible, and being instrumental in taking this counseling space, mental health now and emotional health now and substance abuse further, I think it's a great responsibility for all of us to do what we have done to continue to navigate so that other people can see, you know what, it's tough. Fentanyl is tough, but guess what? It's no different than any other drug. You don't pick up.
There you go. That's it. And I got to say this. I also belong to an organization called GHOD, Get Honest or Die. And our spiritual Tyrone M, right? This dude is so just loving and caring. And he has really helped us grow in our recovery process because we do things outside the box. He have us reading books. We have assignments. You know what I mean? So he's constantly teaching us how to grow so then we can help others how to grow. You know, and as it always says, we plant the seed, we water it, but God gives the increase, right? But we got to do it, man. And this is tireless work. To me, this ain't even a job for me, man, right? This is a calling. I've been called to do this, right? So that's what makes it easy for me to do is remind myself that it's not about me, never has been and never will be. It's about me being, and I like the word to use, serving, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to do, man, is I look to serve more than I look to be served. That's my motto.
Great leadership stems from being a servant to others, then others will follow the great servant.
If you
continue to be a great servant and being able to offer need, fix needs and help with needs and help with healing and help with things that people need to do. And I found out for me, if I take great good care of myself with the self-care, the more I'm able to serve. If I'm taking good care of myself, being the best version of myself, I can serve multitudes of people. But when I empty myself and don't do for me, then what I give is not what I want to give. It's damaging me. So I try to stay healthy and full and give what I can give out of me that is a part of me out of love.
Right. It's like once your cup runs empty, who refills
it? I gotta go back to the mountain.
Right. We can't afford to let the cup get empty, right? And we're gonna refill it. You know, that's that support network. That's that God, that relationship with, you know, the God that he, when he sees you running on fumes, right? I gotta go and let him refill me. And then I'm ready to go again.
Yeah, right? I always use the story when I do it, when I get a chance in context of, if you watch the, if read the story of Jesus, Jesus always broke camp and went somewhere to rejuvenate and come back stronger. He always went on the backside of the mountain, went in the mountains,
right.
And he always said, always told everybody, I come to do my Father's bidding and his work. I don't come for myself. So when you do that and you start giving away from yourself, then God gonna bless. Well, any last words that you'd like to give to our audience before we wrap it up?
I just want to again thank you, you know, for having me today. And thank the guy, his name running from me.
Phil.
Who's your Phil?
Phil.
Yeah, Phil, thank you. And Tony, all I want to say, man, is that if you know you're struggling, have the humility to just ask for help. Because there's plenty of us out here who are willing to help. But our parents, closed mouth don't get fed, right? Yes. So that's all I got to say is remember, right? A closed mouth don't get fed, but I'm always feed you. Just come ask.
Yes, yes. And I agree with Darren, and I know he's a big-hearted individual and been in this recovery thing and has a lot of knowledge to share with those. I have never known him to turn anyone down, anyone. So you have been listening to Criminal Thinking Deterred, where we try to share the knowledge that is available in the recovery space, going into the mental health, fentanyl, and emotional health, substance abuse. We just want to add as much as we can to the community to let them know that it is possible to change your life from an addicted individual dealing with trauma and dealing with PTSD or any other mental illness. We're here to help. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You've been listening to Criminal Thinking Deterred with Tony Moore. Visit our website, www.criminalthinking.net. Follow Criminal Thinking on Facebook and Instagram. Also, listen, follow, and download Criminal Thinking Deterred on the major podcast channels. Thank you and have a productive day.